the secret truth. Through forgiveness we awaken, transforming information and knowledge into wisdom. And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield. Good evening, George.
Okay, how's it going up there? Everything going okay?
Yeah, we're having a nice spring, summery day. No storms, I'm glad to report.
Right. Tonight, we're going to have one guest for the first hour. And if you would like to hold on for another segment or two, that's up to him. He's coming in awful early there at 1 a.m. in Bristol, England, so it's pretty late. But welcome to our program, Tony Gosling. We certainly appreciate you getting up this early in the morning.
No, I haven't got up. I've stayed up late at night, actually. And I'm not in Bristol. I'm over in Gloucestershire, in the Cotswolds, in Stroud, in Gloucestershire.
Oh, man. Thank you for being on the program, man. You're working night and day sometimes, aren't you?
Well, it's a bit like that at the Bilderberg meeting. Yeah, I did a two-hour program. I dedicated a whole hour of it, which I do my own current affairs program on in Bristol, and that's on their community radio there, BCFM, on Friday. But, of course, whenever the Bilderberg conference is on, it's a really busy time for me. You know, I have to decide, I suppose, in the run-up to it each year, am I going to make it over there to wherever the conference is or not. And I think, you know, for the last few years, I've been staying in the UK and trying to make sure that I'm badgering as many press and also, you know, doing my own programs to get the word out there. We did something quite interesting this year, which I'd never done before, and did a vox pop in the street and just asked people if they'd heard of Bilderberg. And, you know, it was something like six people in a row said no. You know, you just get this no, 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 never heard of them. And then one person, this lot, I know all about them. And, of course, they didn't stop talking for 3 or 4 minutes. So this is the most incredible phenomenon, I think, Bilderberg. You know, for anyone who thinks that the NATO countries are democracies, this is the antidote to that error, you know, actually getting your teeth into one of these conferences. And I think for anybody listening, yeah, it's one of those almost like going to Mecca, you know, once in your lifetime, go and witness one of these incredible events and also spend a bit of time with the people like myself that take this matter seriously.
Right. It's really a very powerful group, if not the single most powerful group in the world. Would you agree or would you or not?
Well, I mean, the Bilderberg Conference is not really a powerful group as such, but it is the public face of something, which is a kind of underground secret government network. And, you know, we're dealing with organized crime has now interfaced with NATO. That's certainly the way I see it. And also, quite possibly, you know, the Freemasonry and other types of secret societies too. These people, they really don't want to be known about. You try and call up the chief executive or the chairman of one of the major international banks and get them to come on and talk about what they do. These people are very, very shy of the spotlight, and they will go, for example, sometimes on a BBC program or a mainstream media program where they know that certain questions have been agreed beforehand will be asked and not other questions. But, you know, as a journalist, I will never agree to only ask certain questions to someone who I'm interviewing. And I think any journalist that does that, as they have to with many people, just to get them on the television or the radio, is betraying their listeners, you know, essentially by doing it. They're in Switzerland this year, I think, also is a very significant. The Swiss, generally, quite a democratic country. I mean, a little bit to the right, maybe, of somewhere like Britain or France. But overall, the people in Switzerland are really quite dedicated to democracy. And I wouldn't say it's the most thrilling country in the world, if you've ever visited it. But, you know, everything sort of runs on time. But there's something a little bit soulless about Zurich, I know, when I spent a bit of time there. But ultimately, this is, you know, the wealth of many nations is now contained by the Swiss banks and by the Swiss. The other thing, of course, is it played a very important role in the Second World War. I don't think your listeners will need much to guess what that was. a lot of it, of course, was playing both sides in a as a neutral country, and doing a lot to help Nazis escape at the end of the war, and also helping commodities come into Nazi Germany, as well as smuggling people backwards and forwards through the war. But the Bank for International Settlements in Basel in Switzerland, which had been set up after World War I, was one of the major funders of Hitler. So the connections between the Nazi regime and the Swiss, I mean, I don't think it's fair to say they were entirely neutral during World War II.
Right. This thing has the word synergism seems to come to my mind sometimes. The synergists are deeply involved in all of this. And these guys came together after World War II and swore out to unify, Europe around a single currency, around a single dominant government. And that's what they set out to do. Are they going to make it or not, Tony?
You look at the euro now, George. You know, it's all starting to look rather shaky, isn't it? You know, I think there's a real tension going on right now. And, I mean, it's, you know, as things start ramping up and things like the Middle places like Middle East, I'm no great analyst of all this kind of thing, but you don't need to be a genius. I'm not an economist, but you do need to be a genius to work out that the euro is potentially on its last legs. And I think there's many people in the national governments around Europe who are looking at the euro and looking jealously, actually, at countries like the United Kingdom that refuse to go into the euro. This whole thing is, I mean, the whole euro question was all about tying the politicians up with a European Central Bank, and also, of course, the power really comes from that bank. The Bilderbergers themselves, I mean, really, what's going on there? It's like a bunch of bankers and royalty, maybe a banker on one side and royalty on the other side, holding a gun to the head of our national representatives, people like George Osborne, who's in that conference right now. He's in there as well. I don't know how much you've been following this, with the Treasury team. Now, he's a load of civil servants from Downing Street, number 11 Downing Street, are actually in the conference right now with him. Now, this is one of the big shocks for me this year. And have you been following Charlie Skelton's reporting on the Guardian website?
Yeah, they're getting some sensational shots and video. They're on that hillside looking down at the hotel. And also there was a little trip up the hill that they captured, those people coming back from that little very exclusive little cottage restaurant up there. And they were badgering those people with questions. It was amazing what they were doing.
If any of your listeners have not actually been onto the Guardian website and looked at Charlie Skelton's Bilderberg blog, I think he calls it the Bilder blog, please do so, because I actually think some of the best journalism I have seen in my entire life. Now, I'm not just saying this to butter up Charlie, but I was reading through this stuff last night after we did our program in Bristol, and actually couldn't stop laughing. He's a comedy writer. In fact, he was a script editor for a big series that happened on Channel 4 in Britain here over the last few months called 10 O'Clock Live on Channel 4, which actually was an hour of live comedy, really with some of the best comedians in the country, and Charlie was script editing it. And he's actually pulled the Bilderbergers to pieces through comedy in the best way I've ever seen. I don't know if you saw this thing where he had this, because of course they turn up on Thursday morning to find this great big barrier put around, but it doesn't look like a kind of wall. He describes it as a shower curtain, and then he describes it as the shower curtain of shame.
I like that. Hey, we're going to be right back, Tony. Thank you for being with us this evening. We'll come right back. Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to Tony Gosling. Tony, a little bit about the royalty on the attendee list. I couldn't agree more where you said something about the royalty across the table from the... what did you say, the parliament with the
Well, really, no, I was saying that you've got the kind of bankers on one side with a gun, and on the other side of your head, you've got the royalty with another gun. You know, they're pointing those guns at their head right now, the Chancellor of the Exchequer of the UK. This is the thing that bothers me. You know, he's in charge of the public finances in Britain. He's making a total disaster from top to bottom of it. What he's doing in the middle of this financial recession is he's cutting back massively public services. So, unsurprisingly, the entire economy is grinding to a halt. And what they're doing is they're pointing these guns at his head and they're saying, "You're doing the right thing, Georgie boy, just carry on." Now, this isn't the first time that this kind of attitude has been taken to the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, who's obviously a Conservative MP as well. He's a veteran of something called the Bullingdon Club. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with that, but that's an Oxford fraternal society. Where he had a nickname when he was at Eton with George Osborne was at Eton as well as at Oxford, and he had a nickname when he was there, which was the Oik. Right, so he was the little fag that used to go and do the dirty work and the little jobs for the top boys like David Cameron. So what we've got here is a kind of little fraternal society at Eton or at Oxford, translated and writ large across the country. This is what I think many people don't understand about what's going on right now in our cabinet and in our government here in the UK, is that what we've got is a bullying kind of little cult. And I think actually it's fair to refer to Bilderberg as a cult as well. This is a kind of thing that you get involved with. The thing that really characterizes cults is, of course, is secrecy and welding people together into that secrecy. Now, if you're in a secret organization, which the Bilderberg is absolutely, you know, no one's allowed to murmur a word of what actually goes on, or at least reference anything inside that goes on to Bilderberg. What you end up with is a really quite a pernicious organization and really a complete barrier with the world outside, not only with that, but with ordinary people. And the incredible thing is that these are our democratically elected representatives are actually in there with their civil service staff. Now, I believe you've got something in the United States called the Logan Act, which prohibits this, but we're a kind of flexible country. And the only way to get around a hideous problem like this cult, which seems to be running the political side of NATO right now, is if there is press scrutiny. And, of course, the Bilderbergers smirk and smile as they go in. Peter Mandelson, who's a New Labour MP, he's notorious. His nickname here in Britain is the Prince of Darkness. The press regularly refer to him as the Prince of Darkness. He's in there right now. And someone managed to take a photograph of him as he actually came in his limousine, and he was laughing. Actually laughing. This is the kind of attitude that these people have got. Mandelson, of course, is very, very close to the Rothschild family, to Nathan Rothschild, and you know, they are just, you know, welded together like that. And of course, what you've got is the other thing that is really important to understand is, you know, our main two parties are Conservative and Labour. The Conservative Chancellor of the Exchequer is in there right now, but also the Labour Shadow Chancellor, Ed Balls. He was at a Bilderberg meeting a couple of years ago. So when it comes to economic policy, Bilderberg have a stranglehold. And this is what frustrates me so much about all this, guys, is that, you know, it doesn't matter what you vote for. If these people, the Bilderbergers, are determining who is actually at the top positions in our national countries, in national economies, it makes the whole of democracy a farce. And so who the hell are we to actually go and tell someone like Gaddafi about democracy when we haven't even got democracy ourselves?
Right. You know, go ahead, Charlie.
I was going to say the whole concept of democracy, though, is actually a problem. I don't mean to disagree with you, but I'm for constitutional republics because the problem with democracy is you end up with mob rules or majority rules, and the rights of the individual or the rights of the minority are not protected. That's why the constitutional republic is supposedly, you know, superior to the concept of democracy, because Iran is, can be classified as a theocratic democracy as well as Israel. They call themselves a democracy, but they are theocratic, and they Israel has nuclear warheads against international law and treaty. They're a rogue nuclear armed state, just as bad as North Korea. So the word democracy means
let's not get too sore on democracy, because democracy is actually a principle, and that principle has been totally violated in Britain and in the United States and in Israel. The principle being that the people rule,
no,
the government are there.
The
government are there to serve the people,
I'll tell you why in the United States, no. Because we have separation of church and state. We have kicked monarchy, well, except they got a stranglehold on us through the banking system, the Federal Reserve Act of 1913. But otherwise, we kicked monarchy out on our ass. We have separated church and state. Okay, we don't have a Christian theocracy or a Muslim theocracy or a Jewish theocracy running our government. We're a secular, constitutional republic. And
I think, those are some good points. And I think both of you basically are saying that these people in the back that work behind the scenes are undermining the people's will.
The bankers and the monarchy.
Yeah, see what I mean? Both Charlotte and Tony, y'all are saying it, but from your own perspective and your own, you know what I mean, angles.
The point is that, no matter what system you've got, somebody can have a plan to undermine it. And the Bilderberg
It's the bankers and the monarchy.
Yeah, Charlotte and I have interviewed these people that have written programs to undermine the voting boxes in the U.S. in Florida before. So, another one of their angles. So they're sitting in St. Moritz, and they're making plans to strangle us more. It looks like the Internet is what they want to come at us and close it down. What do you think, Tony?
Well, I think actually it's not that the Bilderberg is a public face, right? So let's just get that clear. I don't think they're in there really so much scheming and planning. They've already decided what they want to do, the steering committee of Bilderberg, well beforehand. And other groups, I would say, if I was the Chinese intelligence service, I would be looking at, for example, other groups which the members of the Bilderberg steering committee are part of. That's where the real power lies, behind the scenes there. The Bilderberg is a schmooze fest. This is where they all get a kind of massive love-in. And the other thing is that they invite people who they think are on the periphery of actually being on their program, but have power. So, for example, the editor of The Observer, Will Hutton, was invited a few years ago. The idea being to sort of schmooze him into saying, well, Will, who are you to say that all these kings and queens and bankers and chief executives are wrong, Will? Actually, bravely, he's clearly not agreed with them. He's stepped away from the whole Bilderberg line. But what they're trying to do is
Rick Perry is their choice for the United States president 2012.
Does look like that. Certainly does
that's
look
what
like
it
that.
Looks like. All of a sudden, he just comes in out of the blue, these people just fold and they just give him their support overnight. You know what I mean? It's really, it looks like it's contrived. It is.
One of the things Charlie Skelton's been doing on the Guardian website is congratulating these various interesting people on their future promotions, which I think is great.
Right. That's good. He's a good comedian. Hey, thank you. We'll be right back. Thanks, Tony.
America's number one source for independent talk radio for over a decade. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Along with Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. We took a little bacon and we took a little beans, and we caught the bloody British in a town in New Orleans. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run it on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.
Welcome back to the Secret Truth. I'm George Butler along with my co-host
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to our special guest from across the pond, Tony Gosling. Tony, your website is thebilderberg.org. Is that correct?
That's right, yep.
Okay, and you keep referencing a good comedian over at The Guardian. Is that guardian.co.uk?
That's right, yeah. But unfortunately, I mean, I bought a copy of the newspaper today, and it's only on the Guardian website, the blog, I'm afraid, as far as I can see. So although people aren't actually reading through it physically in the paper here in Britain today, it's certainly been on their blog. The thing is, that Charlie's actually got an amazing scoop. And I think it's absolutely disgusting that the Guardian newspaper editors, Alan Rushbridger and his people, haven't actually put it in the newspaper, because this is the first time that the Treasury have admitted that our Chancellor of the Exchequer is actually there with his official Treasury team and with civil servants. Every year, up until now, we've been told that this is a private meeting, and that he is, all the politicians that attend in a private capacity. That has now been shown by Charlie yesterday to be a lie. And it's really important. I mean, this is the kind of thing that we now need, I suppose, for to get proof of for your U.S. delegates there, people from Congress and the Senate, or whoever's there as part of your government, because it certainly looks as if, no, it is not a private meeting at all that these people are attending in their official capacity, which, of course, means that that's a prima facie case against them under the Logan Act.
Well, there you go. And see, the thing, the reason about a democracy is a principle. Constitution is a contract. And they got us by the gonads when it comes to contract, monetary contract. You know, you get a loan with the interest and the debt and the sign on the bottom line and the fine print. And I'm all about the contract. And as far as that goes. And now, is his last name Brooker, Charlie Brooker?
No. Charlie Brooker is the comedian. Charlie Skelton is the writer for The Guardian. He's actually a comedy writer. He's not himself a stand-up comedian. And as I said, he was a script editor on the big national TV show, which finished a few weeks ago.
Gotcha.
So, yeah, Charlie Skelton is the man.
Gotcha.
You know, what we have, though, Tony, is that we have a mutual interest here. And when Charlotte said across the pond, that pond is we're England and America and the people, the citizens, the good people, and the good citizens of England and Great Britain and America and the United States have a lot more in common to fend off this power, this money power, than they think. Don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's quite feasible. And I mean, I like
money
the
power
idea.
That's the enemy of both of all our citizens on both sides of the big pond here. See?
Well, a lot of it is
the economy and strangling us to death and funding their companies, and they're just, you know, flushing us down the commode.
Well, it is. And, I mean, they're trying anyway. I don't think they'll succeed. Ultimately, they're trying. I mean, the thing is, as we were talking about democracy, the idea there is that there's got to be a complete switch in attitudes, that our politicians are there to serve the people, just as the bankers and the money system is there to serve the people. It's not there to serve a few super-rich people like the Nathaniel Rothschild on his yacht. It's there for everybody. And we're in the situation now where our media is starting to creak into and groan into action. And even our Archbishop of Canterbury has been very outspoken about the policies that are being pursued right now, because they are essentially, I hesitate to use the word evil, but what's happening now is we've got disabled people are having very, very basic things that they need taken away. Our young people have had their futures really stolen from them by George Osborne and his government. And David Cameron and the Liberal Democrats here in Britain, because they're having to come out of university with massive debts, up to £50,000 of debt hanging around their shoulders. Now, for most people, they're not just simply not going to do that. They're not prepared to mortgage their life in that kind of fashion. And so, you know, there's a lot of ferment in this country at the moment and irritation. There was a massive student riots before Christmas here, which apparently helped inspire some of the uprising in Egypt, although I think there's probably been quite a lot of manipulation there. But I wondered, you two, if you're interested in exploring some of the sort of historical precedents for the Bilderberg, because this is one of the things that I think helps, is to look back through history to see similar kinds of organizations. And I wonder if you're interested in exploring that line.
Yes.
Right. Right. When you're talking about the heads of state, the heads of central banks, and big money people, and now what it looks like to me this time, they pulled in Facebook, they put in Google, Bill Gates is there. There's a lot of other European type of internet type of organizations appearing there. and they're going to come at us from some kind of a security angle on the internet, and then try to get rid of people like yourself and the patriots in America that are speaking out against this power, this money power, this tyrannical fascist state they're developing.
Well, there's one thing I learned, George. Talking to a great photojournalist, Jess Hurd, who was over in, actually as a photojournalist, taking pictures in the Tahrir Square during the uprising in Egypt. And she was saying how incredible it was that, that the Egyptian authorities actually switched off the internet at one point. And it meant that everybody just poured out onto the streets to find out what was going on. It completely counterproductive. So I think, you know, this is one of the things I think maybe that Google and Facebook are going to be rather afraid of being involved in any kind of switch off of the internet because, you know, actually people, once they're riled up by reading what's going on in the world, they actually do start pulling together. So, the other thing is that, you know, as soon as communities get poor, then they start talking more to their neighbors. They start actually starting to heal up the community, which the bankers and the big politicians are trying to divide. Do you agree?
Yes.
Yes, I do. Yeah. In a way, they're on a hiding. You've got these pronosticators and you know what it means, strategists that are saying that it's all CIA, it's all contrived by either the Muslim Brotherhood or whatever. But it looked like to me it's more generic in some cases where the people are rising up for freedom and democracy and liberties. They're tired of the tyrants and the secret police arresting their relatives and torturing and killing them. They said, we've had enough of this stuff.
But you see, I think we should look very, very closely at what's going on in the Middle East because these kinds of, I think that certainly the Bilderbergers will be looking at this very closely because their plan is to make sure that when there is unrest like that, that they control the outcome. I think we have to be absolutely on the ball. You know, you look at things like the Spanish Civil War. A lot of the anarchists that fought in the Spanish Civil War suddenly, towards the end, found themselves having their guns turned on them by people who had been their allies. And, you know, you just have to look, you know, be very, very clear about a united front against the banksters. And I think the most important thing to understand, and this is one of the things that's come out of the Spanish occupations in the city centres in Spain, is fundamental human rights. Water, food, shelter. These are the most important things. Land. Everybody needs it. And unless we can come together, forget all our political differences, and make sure that everybody has enough land to live on, a home, a roof over their head, then we're not going to get anywhere as a society. If we have somewhere to live and someone is homeless, then we still have work to do. And I think if we can come together around those sort of very fundamental principles about the basic human needs, then we're going to get somewhere. Otherwise, it's, you know, we'll just end up squabbling like the communists and the anarchists in the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah. Hey, Tony, one of your favorite scriptures is about love, isn't it? Perfect love casts out.
Well,
how does it go?
Well, I've got lots of favorite scriptures about love, but well, which one are you talking about?
It's something about perfect love casts out fear.
Ah, fear and love. Absolutely right. Yes. And, of course, Bill Hicks, your great comedian from Texas, came up with that one too, didn't he?
Bill Hicks is great. He's out of Austin, Texas. He's a great comedian. Hey, we'll be right back. Thank you for being with us this evening.
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to Tony Gosling. Hey, Tony, we got the His Royal Highness Crown Prince Haakon of Norway. We have the Queen of the Netherlands. We've got, God, there's just a list. These people need, I'm not sure if you're aware of it, but there's a database of people. It's called Little Sis. It's the answer to Big Brother, and it's called littlesis.org. And all these people need to be profiled in there, and in all their associations, and we got to map out this web of control. This is just disgusting. The World Trade Organization, it's right there. It's Foreign Affairs, you know, it's all there, guys. This is
For years and years. I mean, this is when I first started looking into Bilderberg back in 1996, pretty much, I think it was. There was a really early days of the internet, really, I suppose you'd call that. You know, Webster Tarpley had a site up, but not a lot of other people are now quite recognized. Now, back in those days, there was a site by Daniel Brandt. He's now got Google Watch, yeah, and he did a thing called Namebase. Namebase is one of the most fantastic little systems I've ever seen, and it's still around. It looks quite archaic, but it works. And this is a really good system for actually mapping networks of these power brokers. There's also another really useful website. I know maybe this isn't quite so useful for you in the United States, but it's a part of Glasgow University, Strathclyde University, called SpinWatch. And what you can do on SpinWatch is every time an expert pops up on the TV, you can see exactly what their connections are. Yeah. So you can see who's been paying them, which arms businesses are paying a so-called expert
awesome.
From whatever
George,
university.
Excuse me, Tony. George, we're getting a blowback or something. Are you in the wind?
What's
sorry?
I'm hearing a blowing sound.
I can hear a bit of a strange noise, but we'll just persist, I imagine.
Okay.
Yeah, the other thing about all this is these networks, certainly. I mean, there's not necessarily a lot you can do because, these people will meet up. You know, they are wealthy. The only thing I think is it's important that, people think in their hearts and their minds that actually we don't want anything to do with their value system and that we have to put together our own value system, as I was saying before the break. You know, we put that together and we act and we live by it. You know, I think that's the most important thing to do and to recognize that these people are hell-bent on ruling over us. And I think, they also have absolutely no concern whatever for ordinary people like we do. You know, they're completely cut off from us in their ivory tower. In fact, they despise us. I think a lot of the vandals.
You know, this Dominique Batig has called for the arrest of Kissinger and them. What do you think about that? You know, you have a pretty good treatment on your site, and do you think there's a possibility of anything like that?
Yes, well, I actually had a chat to him, and I had an interview with him on the program I did on Friday, only briefly because it was quite a bad line. But Dominique successfully lobbied in the past for restrictions to stop George Bush actually visiting Switzerland, and Bush had to actually cancel the visit because it wasn't certain whether one of the prosecutors from one of the cantons would order Bush's arrest, because clearly he's been involved in ordering torture at Guantanamo Bay. So this is quite a serious move. And the other thing, of course, which you may have heard about was the Italian member of the European Parliament.
Mario Bergoglio. He was arrested and forced down, broken nose and everything. What? Tell us about that.
I think it shows that this is a cult and you can't come in, mate. Yeah, this is your name's not on the list. You're not coming in. And it's not as if it's private. It's secret. This is the two fantastic things that we've discovered this year. One is that there is no excuse to say this is a private meeting anymore when a member of the European Parliament is assaulted, attempting to meet up with these rich and powerful people and give them a bit of his advice. That's not a violent thing for him to do, to walk into a hotel and give some advice to Mr. Kissinger. He should be quite able to do that, but no, he's been punched on the nose or assaulted or whatever. So we can see it's not a private meeting. It's a secret meeting. The other thing is it's not a private the government people that are there are not there in a private capacity. They're there in a public capacity, betraying us. And I think we really all have to pursue that agenda. But anyway, I want you to just look back a few hundred years at similar kinds of organizations, because we mustn't, I don't think, look at Bilderberg in isolation. One of the British writers that I've got a lot of respect for is a guy called Dennis Wheatley. He wrote what is supposed to be the best occult novel of the 20th century, called The Devil Rides Out. And it was made into a film as well, which is a fantastic film. But as a writer, he also looked at all sorts of things to do with the occult. He was very friendly with Aleister Crowley, used to invite him over for dinner, and found out loads and loads of things about the occult. And one of the things that he talked about, which was one of those times the penny dropped with me, when he said, actually, the French Revolution was just retribution by the Templars. And the Knights Templar of medieval times, these same kind of secret societies, which I think still possibly, in some different form anyway, exist today, that the French Revolution was retribution for the murder of the Knights, or not the murder, but the trial and the destruction of the Knights Templar back in the early 1300s, 1307, I think it was. And what Wheatley was saying in that was that these people have long, long grudges. That actually, a lot of their makeup is made of grudges. And so when Philip the Fair discovered that the Knights Templar were actually a satanic cult and had them arrested, that they wanted to destroy absolutely all of the French aristocracy because they all contained Philip the Fair's bloodline. So there was a link over hundreds of years there, I think, between the two. And also the Grand Orient lodges in France. I don't know if you're interested in all the Illuminati stuff, but the historical Illuminati were certainly a kind of elite form of Freemasonry and a kind of a very interesting group, because John Robison wrote a book all about them. I mean, he was an absolute genius back in the late 1700s and decided that this is a very dangerous organization, and he would make sure that if they got their act together in the future to make a mess of things around the Western world, that everybody like us should know about it. So he wrote a book called Proofs of a Conspiracy Against All the Religions and Governments of Europe. Now, Robison was not just any old fella. He was a very close friend of James Watt up in Edinburgh, who's the inventor of the steam engine, and he was a fluent speaker of French and German. So he actually got some original Illuminati writings from the 1700s and translated them into English and wrote a book all about it using these quotes as well. So we have actually, if we want to, a very, very clear record of the plan of what they're up to. You know, this is a complete subversion of religion. And also, the idea is that the Illuminati wanted to control all religion and also governments. They were very, very careful about which elements they were targeting. And I think, the Bilderberg, I'm not saying that they are the Illuminati, but they certainly look rather similar. There's a lot of Freemasonic connections to the Bilderberg.
You know, Tony, those people, when they're up at that level, and especially money, you know what I mean? You have to go back to the money changers in the temple. Jesus ran them out of there, you know. You have the monies, the priests in the Babylonian temples were the money changers. So this money system has always been very dominant in any society. So they're right at the center of power, the money people.
Well, they certainly are, and they don't like Islamic banking. I don't know if you've noticed that. Every time an Islamic bank seems to open up, like in Tunisia, there seems to be problems. You know, the Islamic banking system is very fair.
Sharia law says no usury. Okay, that's pretty good for the average individual.
It prohibits usury. That's right. The Bible does.
That's right. And actually, I was chatting on a Muslim radio station here in Birmingham actually a few months ago, and they were actually amazed to hear that they didn't realise that Christianity actually outlaws usury as well. And here in Britain, up until the Norman Conquest, it was illegal to charge interest. It was only the Normans, who of course weren't really Christians at all. I mean, they were a bunch of Vikings, basically, who overturned that law that said you couldn't charge interest. So for the last 1,000 years or so here in England, we've had interest legal. But before that, when we were a real Christian country, you could not charge interest in Britain. So actually the three main monotheistic religions, Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, are all absolutely as one on this.
Interest fuels the beast. Hey, we're going to be right back. Can you join us for the second hour, Tony?
We'll do another segment, yeah.
Okay, oh, great. That's great. We appreciate it. Thank you. We'll be right back.
And now our co-hosts, Charlotte Littlefield and George Butler.
Welcome back to The Secret Truth. I'm George Butler, along with my co-host,
Charlotte Littlefield, and welcome back to Tony Gosling, Bilderberg.org. Tony, this is your segment. Unless George has a question, I would like very much for you to communicate to our large and vast listening audience what you would like them to know about this year's Bilderberg, the 59th annual Bilderberg.
Yeah, I mean, we did touch on it, didn't we, just before the break, the news there. With this addition of the Google and Facebook bosses to the mix in Bilderberg, this, I think, you know, is a clear sign. This is actually the military getting involved here, not necessarily even with the knowledge of these guys who are there, Eric Schmidt and the Facebook chap. You're a military person yourself, Charlotte. Over the years, we've seen the military spheres expanding. You know, back to, we were talking about the Normans earlier. That was most all land warfare. Then we had sea warfare, you know, Britannia rules the waves and all that kind of stuff. And then when it came to Guernica and the Second World War, suddenly air power was very important. Then we had sort of into space, we had satellites. Now, this is, cyber warfare is absolutely the cutting edge of the military right now. And this is why I think they're in there, because this is essentially a NATO meeting. Let's not forget, this is an interface between big business in the Western world, NATO, and the politicians. And this is why, and also obviously the media, very, very important. But I mean, I just think of them as another corporation. They seem to think of, you know, they're just churning something out, a commodity out, to do a purpose. And that purpose is not necessarily, of course, to keep us informed. So, I mean, that's what I think, that this is one of the big lessons to learn from the list that they've got. And I think that the Swiss media have done very well in actually getting the list during the conference. That makes it a lot easier to actually discuss the meeting while it's taking place and making it newsworthy, even if the editors of various newspapers are scared to print anything about it or are part of a cover-up, you know, actually actively part of a cover-up. So, I mean, that for me, along with this revelation, are the main things that I would say about this year's meeting. Also, I think, you know, Switzerland, sorry guys, but, you know, we don't really trust the Swiss banks. I mean, we have this thing for years and years. I can remember hearing the problems with the Swiss number bank account system, where money can be simply paid into a number bank account, withdrawn. I mean, this is what the traditional way, apparently, that hitmen used to be hired and paid through these numbered accounts. No accountability whatsoever. And one of the fascinating things that a friend of mine, who's actually down at the Bilderberg conference, said to us on our radio show on Friday on thisweek.org.uk, was that he was explaining that he, as a business person, has to put together minutes and file those minutes. So why is it that some of the literally the most powerful people, the richest people in the entire Western world, there's no minutes published? Absolutely none, and it's impossible to get hold of any. So there's a conspiracy going on. It's quite clear. The only thing that bothers me about it all is the Western population going to wake up to it? Because we're so depoliticized, aren't we? Yeah, I think it's probably not quite so much the case in the United States. I think people are a little bit more politicized over there. But in Britain, still think everything is supposedly rosy, even though we're heading for a train crash economic disaster. You know, that seems to be the way of things.
Well, Tony, well, you know, those recent demonstrations over there in London and so forth, the tuition one, and the labor demonstration and so forth, aren't they, there is a population in Great Britain there in England that is really fed up with all this, it looks like to me.
Look, let me just make it clear. This is the young people. The young people do not watch television. They do not read newspapers. They are all over the internet. They're also very, very switched on, let me tell you, and this is so heartening. You know, very, very politicized as well, particularly the best generation for all this, which, of course, is the sort of upper teenagers, lower 20s, university age youngsters are incredibly switched on, and they don't buy all this nonsense about they've got to get a career, because they can see that many of these jobs that they're going to be trying for are either totally unsatisfying jobs or simply there won't be enough jobs there for them. They've seen through a lot of the lies. For example, a lot of them have seen Loose Change and other very good films about the September the 11th attacks and have seen right through all that nonsense. In fact, you know, it's one of the things that I surprised me. It's just walking around sort of sink estates around Bristol, you know, these poor estates, council estates, where there's a lot of poverty. there may be poverty, but my God, these people really know what's going on in the world. A lot of them, like I say, have seen loose change as well. This is the poorer areas, because people have got the time, I suppose, to actually talk with their neighbours. And also, because they're poor, they do talk to their neighbours more. So I don't see it as a grim thing at all, except maybe for the Bilderbergers. Ultimately, it's going to be, they're going to get their comeuppance. I don't have any doubt about that. Their object seems to be a kind of megalomaniac world domination, ultimately. And one of the other interesting things, of course, about this year's Bilderberg Conference is the Chinese delegates. Never seen Chinese senior Chinese people in there before. But that does show that the NATO alliance is cracking. They have to invite the Chinese now because they've annoyed them so much over Pakistan and other things, particularly Pakistan, but also obviously the economy, that they're now having to invite the Chinese. So they will invite the Chinese, but not the Russians, not the Australians, nobody from Africa. The Chinese, what it signifies to me is that the Chinese are the people that they're most afraid of.
Yes, they are. That's why they're – well, the WTO, they brought them into that group years ago to entangle them into an economic dependency and control system. See what I mean?
But
right
think
now,
determined.
The European and American interests broke, it looks like,
the
to me, and they're very scared about total collapse of their financial holdings.
But, I mean, there's some crazy stuff going on. I mean, I really think that the Bilderbergers – in their minds, these big bankers and big business people, they're trying to run the NATO zone like a factory farm. That's what they seem to want, you know, actually treating us like complete idiots. And it's never going to work. What might happen, though, and I think the most likely outcome out of all of this financial disaster and all this megalomania is war. And let's not forget, we're now living in a nuclear age. There's a lot of hawks in there. Richard Pearl, he, I don't think, would bat an eyelid at the idea of a nuclear war. And this is what bothers me. This is why I think we need William Tell, or maybe some of the Swiss police, to just come round, surround that hotel right now, and divide everybody, put them all in individual cells and question them. Because these people are riding us directly into World War III and potentially a nuclear World War III. That's why they need to be arrested.
Well, interestingly, Greece, they had the Coca-Cola corporation out of Greece, and that could be related to the drug running. You know, there is a byproduct of the cocoa plant, you know, that's used in cacao and Coca-Cola.
But I think you've got a really toxic mix there when these massive virtual monopolies, these massive companies like Coca-Cola, are in there with the military. They want markets. You know, they want control of countries where they can grow more of their stuff. You know, incredibly dangerous mix of people in there. And I actually feel rather sorry for George Osborne, our Chancellor, because, you know, he's basically just being threatened and intimidated.
Well,
okay,
good
well, thank
you, guys.
You, Tony, for being with
thank
us
you.
This evening.
I'll speak to you another time. Thank you from Gloucestershire.
Okay, thank you a lot for being with us. We'll be right back.